four demons left. Shankasura, Arishtasura, Keshi, and finally, Vyomasura. So, and things are building up actually in Vrindavan, because very shortly Krishna will leave. So is the whole. The mood is definitely building up. Kamsa is becoming more and more aware of who Krishna is, and more concerned about the need to kill him. And interesting point, according to Srila Rupa Goswami, Kamsa, by this time, he's developed some attraction for Srimati Radharani. Interesting. So, having heard so much about Krishna, and also having heard something about Srimati Radharani, Kamsa sends Keshi and Arishtasura in disguise to spy on Krishna and Radharani. So, Keshi and Arishtasura, they see Radha and Krishna meeting together. Somehow, they get to observe some conjugal exchanges between Radha and Krishna. So Keshi and Arishtasura, this is some days before they come back and finally get killed. But they see Radha and Krishna and they think that this is definitely this rascal who's been killing all of our friends and relatives. And this girl with him is so beautiful. She should be the wife of Kamsa. And not only Radharani, but the other gopis also. Particularly Radharani, but also the other gopis. They both thought that all these girls are so nice, they shouldn't be with this little cowherd boy, Krishna. They should be enjoyed by Kamsa. So Keshi and Arishtasura went back to Kamsa and explained all this. So then, Shankasura was sent by Kamsa. His idea was not actually to kill Krishna and Balaram, but Shankasura's idea was just kidnap the gopis, and particularly Srimati Radharani, and not worry so much about Krishna. So I'm going to tell you today two different descriptions of the same pastime. One is from the Bhagavatam, the other is from Lalita Madhava of Srila Rupa Goswami, because he gives a very elaborate description of the pastime, and it's quite different from what's in the Bhagavatam. So according to the Bhagavatam, this pastime took place on Gopurnim, holy, the holy day. And in the evening, Krishna and Balaram, they were together conducting rasa dance together, meaning each had their own group of gopis. So in the same place, one was one side, one was the other. But they were both engaged in rasa dance with their own groups of gopis simultaneously in the same vicinity. And they were singing, so Krishna and Balaram were singing, and all the gopis were making music of different sorts. It was a very captivating scene. Krishna and Balaram were singing so beautifully. It's described they were covering the entire range of musical notes and changing scales, and the tunes would fluctuate so rapidly that no human being could do like that. So the gopis, when they're hearing this astonishing singing of Krishna and Balaram, they were just completely overwhelmed. So it was really a very exceptional scene. Because of the singing of Krishna and Balaram, the gopis' hair loosened, their dresses slackened, their garlands fell to the ground, but they didn't even notice, because they were just so entranced by this beautiful singing. So then Shankasura came on the scene. Shankasura is a yaksha. He's described in the Bhagavatam as being an associate of Kuveras. He, as she has described, Shankasura was one of the guards in Kuvera's treasury. But one day he saw the Kastuba gem. He saw the Kastuba gem and he became so attracted that he stole it and ran away. And then he joined Kamsa. So Shankasura stole that gem. And then he attached it to his head. Rupa Goswami explains that it was actually fixed on his head, not just in his hair or on a turban or something. It was actually sort of, he planted it in his head. He got really attached to it. So, and he had these curling, fearsome curling fangs. So he really looked quite extraordinary with his really strange looking fangs and this gem actually in his head. Huh? Fangs like wolves have and Dracula and, yeah, like that. Curling fangs. So he really looked very extraordinary. So what was happening was Krishna and Balaram were standing aside a little and singing, and the gopis were just dancing together. And Shankasura suddenly just swept onto the scene. It's explained that he was carrying a big stick. And the way he then captured all the gopis, but the way he did it was through threatening them with his stick. He wasn't able to touch them by the influence of Yoga Maya. He wasn't able to touch the gopis, but still he threatened them with the stick, and therefore they cooperated, and he started driving them away for Kamsa. Just like, I don't know if we mentioned, but Abhimanyu, he was married to Radharani for some years, living in Yavat, and Abhimanyu is a special expansion of Krishna. He's an expansion of Krishna's shadow. So Abhimanyu was quite convinced that she's my wife, and she was feeling that he's my husband, and Jatila was quite convinced that she's my daughter-in-law. But Abhimanyu's relationship with Radharani was very distant, and it's described that Abhimanyu never touched Radharani. Same idea, due to the influence of Yoga Maya. He never touched her, even though he was officially the husband. In fact, it's described, he was never even able to touch her shadow. So it was really quite an extraordinary relationship they had. But still, they were in this mood. They had this idea that we're married. So, similarly, Shankasura wasn't able to touch the gopis by Yoga Maya's potency, but with his stick, through threatening them and gesturing in different ways, he got control of them and then started herding them away towards Mathura. So then both Krishna and Balaram went running in pursuit of Shankasura. Shankasura quickly saw that he couldn't escape both of them while trying to herd the gopis away. So he abandoned the gopis and ran for his life. So Krishna then told Balaram, you stay and look after the gopis, and I'll get this Shankasura. So he ran after Shankasura, caught him, and punched him in the head with his fist and knocked his head off. And then he ripped the gem out of his head. Jai. And then Krishna was thinking that I want to give this gem to Srimati Radharani. But then he came back and he saw everyone was looking at this gem. And he thought, I can't just give it directly to Radharani, the other gopis will become jealous. So he gave it to Balaram. And Balaram gave it to Radharani. So then, in Lalita Madhava, there's quite a different description. Rupa Goswami explains that in this case it's only Srimati Radharani involved of the gopis. But the same idea, Shankasura is trying to kidnap her for Kamsa. Srimati Radharani went with Jatila to do worship of the sun god. And who should they find at Suryakund but one very dark-skinned Brahmin boy, rather sort of flashy Brahmin boy. They were wondering, is he really a Brahmin? And he had one sort of muddled-looking Brahmin assistant, who's Madhu Mangal. So, Krishna, as the first Brahmin, he immediately offered, oh yes, we'll do the Surya Puja for you. We'll do it very nicely. And Madhu Mangal said, yes, we'll do it very nicely, but anyone can guess what he wanted first? Actually, he wanted a feast. Before we start, I want a feast. And he starts listing out the preparations. Then Krishna interrupts him, because Krishna wants to get to associate with Radharani. Actually, Krishna tells Jatila, why don't you send this boy away, this Brahmin? Then Jatila said, no, we want the puja to be done nicely. So she told Madhu Mangal, I'll give you a big feast afterwards, when we've finished. So then Krishna started chanting these Surya Puja mantras. And these were like cryptic mantras, which he just made up. And you probably know that in Sanskrit, generally, most words have a primary meaning, but then a secondary meaning also. So he was reciting these mantras, which the primary meaning was something like a Vedic mantra, some sort of idea of puja and worship. But the secondary meanings, they were like, oh my dear Radharani, I want to embrace you and won't you come and soothe my burning heart like this. So Jatila was listening to these mantras. Of course she'd been there many times and they'd met real Brahmins who had done pujas with mantras, and she thought, I never heard these mantras before. And then she was thinking, but she's a little dull, Jatila. So she couldn't really catch what Krishna was saying, but she just got a little hint about these secondary meanings, that Krishna wants to meet Radharani and run off with her and enjoy swinging on the swing with her and like this. And she spoke to Madhu Mangal and said, are you sure these are Vedic mantras? They sound strange. And Madhu Mangal, in a very haughty way, said, what would you know about Vedic mantras? All you know are the, what they call the Riri songs of the gopis, just the little folk songs they sing. That's all you know, but you don't know our Vedic mantras. So poor Jatila felt very embarrassed, and she stepped back and remained quiet. So then at the end, Madhu Mangal said, yes, now we're finished, so now I want my feast. So Jatila said, all right, you come with me. So they went back to Yavat, and she said, I'll leave Radharani here to do some other pujas on her own. I'll leave her under the protection of this dark-skinned Brahmin friend of yours, because he looks very honest and straightforward. So I'm sure she'll be safe. So Radha and Krishna were then going to meet together. It seemed like a sort of like a classic situation where they would be able to meet very happily without interruption. But who should come on the scene but Mukhara, who's Radharani's grandmother, one of her grandmothers. And the thing about Mukhara is that she is sort of a little unstable. Sometimes she's in one mood, sometimes she's in another. Sometimes she likes Krishna, sometimes she doesn't like Krishna. Sometimes she likes Radha and Krishna to meet, sometimes she doesn't like. So, by the arrangement of Yoga Maya, today she was in a bad mood. So there, Radha and Krishna, they're going to have, you know, got such a wonderful opportunity to meet together and enjoy together. But Mukhara is very upset to see them together. And she says, oh, what a great misfortune. This kalpa lata, this wish-fulfilling creeper of my granddaughter, who is meant to embrace a sandalwood tree, Abhimanyu, has now been caught by a castor oil plant. So she was lamenting like that. And then she took a stick and she started chasing Krishna. And Krishna had to run. Now, right at this very moment, Shankasura came onto the scene and he saw, there she is. There's Radharani, I've got to kidnap her. But then he saw, oh, there's that Krishna. So he hid. He was hiding, hoping he'd get an opportunity. Then he saw Mukhara come on the scene, and then there's Mukhara chasing Krishna. But Mukhara is half blind. So Krishna goes and hides on one side behind some trees. Mukhara goes running over to the other side, right up to the tree where Shankasura is. And she sees, because she's half blind, she sees some human-like form. And she thinks, oh, there you are, you rascal, trying to hide from me. And she goes up and threatens Shankasura with a stick. But Shankasura, seeing that Krishna is now hiding on the other side, he thinks, now's my chance. So he runs over, grabs Radharani and runs off. And Mukhara, understanding the real fact that this wasn't Krishna in the tree, but it was a big demon and now he's stolen Radharani, Mukhara is in total distress. And Krishna comes on the scene and he tells her, don't worry, I'll save your granddaughter. So Mukhara's mood changes completely. Previously Krishna was a castor oil plant, very bitter and foul, but now he's the hero. So in order to like really convince her and deepen her mood of appreciation, Krishna says a whole lot of very like bold, makes a lot of bold statements about what he's going to do to Shankasura. Very heroically, in a very gallant mood. And he tells Mukhara that, actually calls out, standing right next to Mukhara, but Shankasura is running away with Radharani. So he calls out, you wicked demon, offensive to Radharani, I feel great pain because I can't spend eternity torturing you. How can I torture you forever if you simply die? So Mukhara is coming out with all sorts of appreciative expressions. Oh my hero, you're so wonderful, and like that. So then Krishna goes chasing after Shankasura, catches him, and according to this description, he kills him by ripping the jewel out of his head.
Jai.
And that's the end of Shankasura. So now, then because he fails, then Kamsa sends Aristasura next, and we'll discuss about him in a minute. But Shankasura, it's slightly inaccurate on page 52 what he represents. He represents the anatha of desire for name and fame and the association of the opposite sex, but there's a difference. This sounds like Prahlambasura again. There's a difference And actually it's stated right back in the beginning where we list out all the demons, on pages 7 and 8, that he represents a proneness towards acquiring name and fame and desire for the opposite sex under the plea of devotion. So this is a very subtle and rather insidious type of anatha. Not just lusty attraction to the opposite sex or that type of anatha, but actually in the context, under the plea of devotional service. So it's really something unpleasant. Like, for example, to give you an example of what I mean, sometimes it happens that someone is doing sankirtan, book distribution, and anyone not mark themselves present? Okay. And so they're out there, but because having a material body, they have some attraction to the opposite sex. So while they're out on sankirtan, they get into the, like a pattern of approaching members of the opposite sex. And, you know, preaching very nicely to them, or whatever. This sort of idea. Or someone is managing a temple, or involved in managing the temple, and therefore he has to counsel devotees, but he goes out of his way to counsel the ladies at great length, you know. So this type of thing. Sometimes it happens in the deity department. Sometimes boys and girls get to mix, and in the name of service, they actually start associating on the material platform. So in the name of devotional service, this type of thing may happen. Desire for name and fame, I think we already mentioned, that a devotee wants to become known amongst the other devotees for being very expert at something. This is related, or this is part of the category of anathas, of mistakes that one can make in the course of performing devotional service, imperfect devotional service. So these things can happen. The devotee feels, you know, I must preach to this member of the opposite sex. So we should be very careful about this. We should be very careful. There have been fall downs, I don't know how many, but there have been quite a number in our history because of this type of thing. My mantra guru?
What about this pastime of killing the Shankashudas?
Where?
Yeah, it started at one spot and then it ended in another spot.
As far as I know, it's somewhere near Radhakund. But I don't know exactly.
That's where it ended. You know where it
started? I'm not sure.
I heard one version somebody described it was near Radhakund.
I see, it may be, yeah.
Near Radhakund, the actual.
It's in the vicinity of Radhakund, basically.
Krishna ran and
right. How did you? Right.
Yeah, the demon actually touched
Radharani. Somehow or other, he grabs Radharani, yeah, according to Rupa Goswami, he actually catches hold of Radharani and drags her away.
The first version is he wasn't able to touch
them. According to the Bhagavatam. He grabs hold of Radharani and pulls her away.
This means he's touching a chaya form, like the...
It's possible.
Like the Ravana touched the chaya sita.
It's possible, but it's not... I haven't seen any explanation. So anyway, we should be very careful about this anatha, because it's a really, like... It's a little more subtle and definitely a very unpleasant type of anatha. That one comes to devotional service in order to get free from all these things, but then in the context of devotional service one gets entangled in the same things that one is trying to get free from in the name of devotional service. So it's really not very nice. Any comments or questions on that? Further? So let's go on and discuss about Aristasura. In his previous life, he was a Brahmin named Varatantu, who was a disciple of Brihaspati. But one day he was sitting on the ground, listening to Brihaspati, but his feet were sticking out. So Brihaspati cursed him. "You're sitting like a bull sits, so you become a bull." He didn't actually curse him to become a demon. He cursed him to become a bull, as we've mentioned in regard to Devasamuni. Some of these Vedic sages are really heavy. So, you know, I don't think many of us would get very far under them. We'd probably get cursed before long. So it's described that he then took birth as a very nice bull in East Bengal. He was a very nice bull, but he got into bad association with some demoniac bulls, and he became a demon. Interesting description. So he became Aristasura. Then Kamsa defeated him, actually in the case of all these demons. Kamsa, there's some story of how Kamsa meets them and fights them and defeats them, and then they become his servants. So in the Gargasamhita, yeah. So Kamsa defeated Aristasura, and Aristasura became his servant. And then he sent Aristasura to spy with Keshi, to spy on Radha and Krishna. And then he sent Shankasura to try and kidnap Radharani, but when Shankasura was killed, then he sent Aristasura back and told him, "You kill this Krishna." So Aristasura, it's described he disguised himself when he went to spy initially. I don't know quite how he disguised himself, because he's described as being so big that he touched the clouds, and clouds would form around his back like a mountain. Somehow or other, due to the movement of the air and the moisture in the atmosphere, clouds form around the mountain. So Aristasura was so big that clouds would form around his back. But somehow he had disguised himself and come in and spied on Radha and Krishna. So Aristasura came. As he was coming, Lord Shiva saw him coming. But then Aristasura looked so nasty that Lord Shiva ran away, took hold of Nandi, his bull, and hid him in fear that Aristasura might attack his Nandi and kill him. So, yes, he hid Nandi. Hide, yes. He hid him. Shiva became frightened and hid his own bull Nandi in a cave in Mount Mandara. So he came making like shrieking and roaring sounds, which were so horrible that some of the pregnant cows and women had miscarriages. Then he wandered through the village. This, of course, is Nandagram, scraping the walls of the buildings with his horns and passing stool intermittently. Acharyas explain that it wasn't nice cow dung or bull dung. It was very offensive smelling stuff. And he was just walking along, and every couple of steps some of the stool would come out. It was really quite a scene. So everyone, when they saw Aristasura, everyone ran to Krishna, crying out for protection. Krishna placed one arm on Subal's shoulder and confronted Aristasura. and told him, "You're the lowest of living entities. Why are you frightening the inhabitants of Gokula? What will you gain by this action? If you have come to challenge my authority, then I'm prepared to fight you." Then Lord Krishna slapped his arms like this, Madhu Mangal does sometimes, and he made a funny noise, which infuriated Aristasura. First of all, he's challenged, and then Krishna sort of like making fun of him by making this funny sound. So then Arista's eyes turned blood red, and they were he was so angry, they were moving back and forward, so very agitated. He rushed at Krishna, just like a thunderbolt released by Indra. Krishna caught him by the space between his horns, right in his forehead, and stopped him dead in his tracks, and then pushed him back about 20 yards. 18. And the Arista got up again, perspiring all over, and charged at Krishna. And then Krishna caught him by the horns, threw him on the ground, and started kicking him. And just kept on kicking and kicking and kicking and kicking, until Aristasura, it's described, he became like a wet rag. He just got booted out of shape, practically, just mashed up by Krishna's lotus foot. Jai. Pretty merciful, O Krishna. So in the end, he looked like a wet rag, squirming on the ground, moving his legs violently, bleeding and passing stool and urine, with his eyes popping out of the sockets. And then he was liberated.
He got kicked to death.
He got kicked to death, yes, and then he got liberation. And then they left his body there, and they left, eventually all that was left was the skeleton. And sometime later, when Lalita is speaking the Hansa Dutta, Rupa Goswami has recorded the Hansa Dutta, she's giving instructions to one swan how to go and see Krishna in Mathura and to ask Krishna to come back. So she says that as you go out, you'll see the skeleton of Arishtasura. It's so big that sometimes the followers of Lord Shiva mistake it for Mount Kailash. So they go climbing up on the skeleton, try to ascend to its peak. Now, of course, Arishtasura, this whole pastime is connected with the appearance of Radha Kund. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur gives a beautiful description. I won't read it all because it's a little long, but those of you who have paid for the notes, is it in the 10th canto? Well, it's based on that. Oh, is it in the 10th canto? Right. I see, okay.
Translation.
The translation, right.
And the
original. Is it? Right, okay. Yeah, it's in one of the purports, I guess, in that chapter. It's a very beautiful description of how Radharani refuses to allow Krishna to touch her because he just killed a bull. Even though he was a demon, but still, a bull is a bull. So you have to bathe in all the holy places. So then Krishna stuck his heel into the ground, and then water came up from that. It was the rivers from the holy places in the lower parts of the universe. That water came up from the hole that Krishna made with his heel. And then all the other waters from the other holy places, they all came just flying through in personified forms. And Krishna asked them to take up residence there, that's in Shamakund. Then Krishna told the gopis that, just see how pious I am. I'm so pious that all these holy rivers and holy places, they've all come here to my Kund. But just look at yourselves, you're so impious. You couldn't get water like this. You couldn't get all the holy places to come for you. So you haven't executed any pious activities, you girls. So then Radharani, in a very angry mood, she said, we'll show you. We'll dig a kund, which is even better than yours. And we'll fill it up with water from Manasi Ganga. We'll get billions of pots of water from Manasi Ganga. And then the leader, like a representative of all those other holy places, that leader came and begged Radharani, please allow us to come into your kund. So eventually Radharani relented. And then the waters from all the holy places which were in Shamakund, they forcibly broke through into this hole which the gopis had dug by hand and with their bracelets. So the waters forcibly just pushed through and poured into Radhakund. Huh? And then Krishna glorified Radharani's kund. Radharani says, well, Radha and Krishna speaking about their kunds. My dear Radha, may this pond of yours become even more glorified in this world than mine. I'll always come here to perform my water sports and bathing. As such, as you are dear to me, so is this lake. And then Radha replied, I'll also come to take bath in your pond, even though you may kill hundreds of Arishta demons here. Anyone, then she gives a benediction, anyone in the future who has explicit devotion for this lake where you chastised Arishtasura and who takes bath here or who resides here is sure to become very dear to me. She bathes in Shamakund, yeah. So, one can become dear to Radharani in that way.
I'm just wondering if the gopis were successful in bringing some of the Manasi Ganga to Radharani.
There's no description that they did it. They were going to do it. Radharani was threatening. But then the leader of all those holy places came, but it may have included Manasi Ganga because it was all the holy places in the universe. Yeah. Manasi Ganga manifests at Yavat to bathe Radharani's feet at Yavat, apparently. So Arishtasura represents fraudulent religion, bogus religion, different types of cheating religion, irreligion, in the guise of religion. And in the Bhagavatam, there's a very nice list, 5 types of irreligion. So we want you to write these down because we're going to ask for a couple for our test. They're in the 7th canto, chapter 15, verse 12. I'll write them on the board if we've got some chalk. First of all,
Vidharma. You can read my writing. Vidharma. Then Abhasthana, then Upadana, then Chaladharma, and Paradharma, not meaning supreme, but so these are 5 types of irreligion, fraudulent religions.
Write them down, and I'll tell you what each one is. So Vidharma, the first one, means religious principles which obstruct you from performing your real occupational duty in terms of vanashram. Religious principles which obstruct you from performing your real occupational duty. And Prabhupada gives the example of so-called swamis and yogis say that you can follow any religious system because they're all the same. And this way it can encourage you to go against the system of religion which is actually natural to you, or the system of occupational duty in fact, which is really natural to you. Like if someone had told Arjuna, if Krishna hadn't been there on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and someone had told Arjuna, yes, you go away and you just become a renunciate. Good idea. So that would have been vidharma, because it would have been against his performance of his real duties. So that's vidharma. Then abhas dharma. Abhas, of course, means shadow or a dim reflection. And the example that Prabhupada gives is of Ramakrishna. Prabhupada says, it has now become fashionable for any rascal or fool to be elected God. And there are many missionaries who have concocted their own gods, giving up their relationship with the real God. We find that even an illiterate person who has lost all intelligence is elected God. And although he has a temple, it has meat-eating sannyasis, and many polluted activities go on there. Prabhupada wrote one drama, you may have heard of it, the Murugi Mission. You heard of that? The Chicken Mission. Yes, don't you know that? It's in New York. Everybody's there. Had it a few years ago. The Murugi. Murugi means chicken.
M-U-R-G-H-I?
Something like that. Murugi. Yes. One man meets his friend, hasn't seen him for some days, and he sees his friend is wearing saffron. And he says, oh, what happened to you? He says, I became a sannyasi. I joined the Murugi Mission. And the first man says, really? But how could you give up your family and become a sannyasi? He said, no, no, no. You don't have to give up your family to become a sannyasi in the Murugi Mission. And the first man says, oh, really? But how did you give up eating meat? And the man says, no, you don't have to give up eating meat to become a sannyasi in the Murugi Mission. Prabhupada wrote this drama. Yes, it's Ramakrishna Mission. So, it's a manufactured religion. Just concocted, completely concocted. Vidharma means, it's also a type of concoction, but it's more like that it's all one and you can do any duty, it doesn't matter, as you like. In this way, it's opposed to Varnashram Dharma. But Abhas Dharma means manufactured religion, which is negligent of religious principles altogether. Create your own God, elect someone God, put yourself forward as God. Then Upadharma means a sub-religion. It shares some similarities with real religion, but it's lacking some of the features of real religion. So Prabhupada talks about Buddhism. In Buddhism, he says, ahimsa is not a religious principle in itself, although it is an important quality for persons who are actually religious. So a devotee is naturally non-violent, but that doesn't mean that that anyone who is non-violent is automatically a devotee. You get the idea? So it means some process which involves only sub-religious principles, which are included you know, as part of real religion, but is actually lacking the real essence, which is the relationship with Krishna. As you see in the case of Buddhism, that there's no God there. Then, chala dharma means taking shastra and then twisting it. Misinterpretation of Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada says, when Krishna directly says something and some rascal interprets it to mean something different, this is chala dharma, a religious system of cheating, a jugglery of words. Then, paradharma means attempting to practice some religious principles, which are quite bona fide religious principles, but you are not fit for them. You are not qualified to follow those. Like, someone, young person decides, I'm going to take sannyas, but he's only 18 years old or something like that. Something like that. So religious principles that one is not fit for. So we want you to learn two of those for our little test, and that'll be all for the test, actually. Comments or questions? Not clear? Means trying to follow religious principles which you are not fit for. They are real religious principles, but you are not qualified to take them up.
You try to follow.
But you try, yeah. That's what it means.
Sannyasi or brahmachari trying to follow the dharma of the grihastha.
Yes, something like that also. Yeah.
I'll just have once a month sex.
What did you?
I think I must have heard in that play that Srila Prabhupada wrote that sannyasi was saying, I'm a sannyasi all week and on the weekends I go home to my family.
Is it? I see. I haven't actually read the whole thing, I just heard a few.
I just heard about it too.
This was in connection with the Murti mission?
Yeah.
Play.
I'm a sannyasi during the week, but on the weekend I'm with my family. That's interesting. So I haven't heard of this play before.
You haven't heard of it?
Is it by Prabhupada?
Yes, Prabhupada wrote it himself. They have a copy. They had a copy at least a few years ago in the New York temple. The Murugi mission. And his friend is just becoming more and more amazed that, but how did you give up your beedis? You don't have to give up beedis to be a sannyasi in the Murugi mission.
He must have written it very early then, you know?
Yeah.
66 or something.
It may have even been before that, possibly. I understood it to be from before he came to the West. I mean, at least that was the impression I got.
In Harisori's diary, that episode in Nellore, I'm not sure which volume it is, probably Nellore, two sisters were donating some land,
right.
And the devotees found that they were very uncordial, and then they saw that there was a bush that was in the shape of a chicken.
Right.
The devotees reported this probably that one bush was in the shape. Was it Tulsi that was the shape of
it? I think it was a Tulsi, yeah. You know, there's the art of cutting trees and so...
Oh, so they cut the tree.
Yeah, to look like a chicken.
And I thought I figured out that the reason why it was so strange that these ladies were eating... There was also chickens.
Yeah.
Probably, and they were eating chickens.
And they were followers of Ramakrishna, weren't they?
Yeah, they were trying to actually, it was a whole plot to get his crown to buy the land and build a temple. And then at the last minute, they were going to take away the
something
time.
Like that.
There were certain conditions, and if the devotees didn't read it in a certain time,
right?
Then
then the Ramakrishna Mission would get the building back. So it's just all planned to get the devotees to spend their money and use their labor to build it back.
Right. Any other comments or questions?
Can you just tell us quickly again what we have to do for the test?
If I can remember it all, I haven't got it all here with me. There were five more demons and then others they represent. And the characteristics of the anathas which the demons killed by Lord Balaram represent, the information on that's on page 33.
Say that again.
The characteristics, the special characteristics of the anathas which the demons killed by Lord Balaram represent, the information's on page 33. Some special considerations regarding the demons killed by Lord Balaram. Then, did anyone have them written out? I don't have the list here. You have one?
It was the reasons why Krishna preached Karma Yoga in philosophy. Three.
Yeah. Well, three of the six arguments which make up Karma Mamsa. Yeah, three of the six. There were six we gave. And then.
This one, six principles of. Given by Sarvada.
Right. But you only have to learn three of them, I think.
You have to learn three
more?
Yeah.
I don't know, there's two reasons Krishna wanted to stop the
Indian
worship. Who is it? Oh, yeah.
Who is this?
Two reasons.
What was
this? Which one? I can give you all of them tomorrow. I've got them all written down, I just don't have them here with me. I missed it myself. There was a number of, three of the hidden meanings. Indra was trying to criticize Krishna, but he was speaking. Saraswati was influencing him to actually, in a hidden way, glorify Krishna. And the others? What were the others?
Five demons.
Okay. Anyway, we'll go through it again tomorrow. Oh yes, yeah, the subtle contaminations which are in that purport from the CC on the second page down at the bottom. Three of the six or seven in that essay, that purport.
Do we have a copy of it?
Yeah. I gave it out separately, you know, those three pages.
Yes, yes.
The purport.
Subtle contamination. Three subtle?
Three out of there. The Sanskrit and English, yeah, three of them. Second page at the bottom, yeah. Big that? Yes, Kutinati, Puja, Pratishta. Jiva Himsa, Nishadachar, right. Exactly. But we'll run through them all tomorrow. Okay, any other points? So read about Keshi and Vyomasura tomorrow, please. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.